a lot of people will remember a world before automation and cattle class bulk billing, and when your doctor actually really knew you and had a history and a continuity with you. How did it get so chaotic and overwhelming for practitioners?
There's no simple answer to that. In the 1950s, a doctor would do 1 year of internship. They might live in the hospital or nearby to the hospital. We didn't have things like ICUs in every hospital, so they weren't awake perhaps during the night as they are now. There wasn't the same kind of expectation. There was perhaps a little bit more art and a bit less science in the medicine. These days, doctors can be unaccredited or in training as a resident or a registrar in a hospital for a very long time before they get on a training program. We have this sort of dual class system or competitiveness between overseas trained doctors and locally trained doctors. The workforce wants to be in the city rather than in a regional area. So there are a whole lot of things that have progressed and created these circumstances for doctors. I think COVID will create a whole new breed of these questions. You know, telehealth has come ahead so quickly compared to what it would have done without COVID. To speak for psychologists, you could only see a psychologist in your local area before. Now you can go on telehealth and see a psychologist from anywhere, not only in Australia, in the world. You might not get your Medicare if you go outside of Australia, but the landscape is changing again very rapidly, and so there's no simple answer to that question. But I think that the culture of medicine and the culture of health have big problems that need addressing, and our community cultural expectations need to be adjusted. So on all three levels we need to adjust. It's not fair in my mind to ask the doctors to make all the changes. I think as patients and as community we also need to make some changes. There are some doctors in America who encourage their patients to ask the doctor, how are you, when they arrive, and to have for the patients to generate this more human connection. And there'll be some patients, some people listening, who say, well, I already do that and it hasn't got me anywhere. But I do encourage people to try and see their doctors as human. You know, if you want a human response, perhaps you need also to respond to the doctors in a human way. They cop an incredible amount of abuse and challenge in their ordinary working life that other people just simply don't have in their organisational working life.
It seems that there's a common denominator here with a lot of workplaces of people trying to be efficient, people trying to do too much in an automated environment, a non-personal environment, quickly. I'd imagine that under-resourcing and understaffing is an issue, because we hear about bullying in hospitals and things like junior doctors doing these horrendously long shifts, and a lot of people leaving medicine.
Yeah, I think the jury's out a bit in terms of people leaving medicine post-COVID. We expect a long tail of post-traumatic stress after COVID, probably 2 years once we say the pandemic is finished, where we'll have mental health issues to deal with in our health workforce. So we're on a very long road with this pandemic. There's a lot of things that we're going to see unfold over the next few years.
But mental health is still regarded as a personal problem rather than a cultural problem. And I could imagine that would be the same for doctors, as they would go home being the kind of high achiever types, going, is there something wrong with me, or is it the context and the culture that I'm working in?
Beyond Blue did some research with PwC in 2013. At that time, 59% of doctors who responded to the survey, and there was a large number, I think it was 12,000 doctors replied to the survey, 59% said that it would be embarrassing to become the patient. And so I think that's a very big cultural issue, that a doctor doesn't want to become a patient, and this sort of idea that they're superhuman or superheroes or robots or somehow different, that they can set aside their humanity or their humanness in that way. And 40% of the doctors in that who responded to that survey said that if a doctor had had a mental health issue in the past, that they wouldn't be as competent. And there's a big problem with that, because if I've had anxiety, say I had some triggering experience in my life 10 years ago and I had a period of a year or two where I needed to take medication or have counselling or whatever to understand how to respond better to my anxiety, that actually doesn't make me a bad doctor or a worse doctor. In fact, it might make me a better doctor, a more empathic doctor. But the mandatory reporting rules in medicine mean that doctors who show any mental health issue that might be of concern to the doctor treating them, that they must report, that the treating doctor must report. Now, actually, most doctors who have a mental illness or a mental health challenge don't need reporting for mandatory care. They only really need to be reported if they place a risk to patients, and we would all be invested in wanting those doctors to be reported by anybody who's treating them. The reality of this law, and it's different in Western Australia to the other states, but the reality of this mandatory reporting law is that it frightens most doctors, and so they're very reluctant to go and see a GP or go and talk to somebody about their own mental health challenges. So these cultural issues of the structural systemic issues of the reporting, the cultural issue of it would be embarrassing to become the patient, all mean that things stay in secret and stigma still exists. Stigma is kind of fed in that way. But the other thing I want to say is that burnout is not a mental illness, and I think we need to be really very clear about that. Burnout happens because workplace conditions are not managed properly. And so if we're talking about a mental illness, our response is a bit different to if we're talking about burnout. So if somebody is burnt out, they're exhausted, and it's the kind of exhaustion that if you take a holiday and you come back within the first patient, you can feel exactly the same again. And people in other industries will be familiar with that too, that you take a holiday, think, oh, I just need a break, in 2 or 3 weeks, maybe even have a month off. You come back to work and within a day or 2 days, you feel exactly like you felt before you went on holiday. So that's the kind of exhaustion we're talking about. A sense of depersonalisation, and particularly a sense of hostility or cynicism. So, you know, who cares? Nobody cares anyway. What's the point? It's just like talking to a brick wall, that kind of thinking and talking. And a sense of hostility, like, you know, well, I'm just going to get what I need and get out of here as fast as I can kind of thing. And that sense of no efficacy. Well, it doesn't really matter. I don't have any power here. I'm a bit kind of helpless. I don't feel like I've got any autonomy, and whatever I do have isn't making a difference anyway. That feeling, that way of thinking to ourselves is because the management of the circumstances has not been adequate. And now sometimes that can be because the individual doctor or the individual worker in other industries is at fault in some way, hasn't managed well, doesn't have the skills they need to manage effectively. But very often it's because the systems and the structures are not enabling. So the way Medicare pays has a big impact, not only on primary care doctors, GPs, but also in the way hospitals run their theatres and their lists and visiting the surgeons and so on. All of these systemic structural things need to be addressed from a leadership point of view. So no individual doctor can really fix all of that. And so we see our junior doctors now making a claim supported by the AMA about the hours that they work. It's incredibly exciting because they're systemically trying to address one of the causes of burnout, which is working too many hours. So our junior doctors are not logging on average 16 hours a fortnight because they're not getting paid for it. It's like this hidden labour that's not being paid for that they can't challenge individually because they're worried that they won't then progress up the hierarchy in terms of getting onto a training program, becoming a specialist, because the people that they would object to are the people who write their assessments and their reviews and say they're ready for the next step. And oftentimes the supervising doctors will recognise that there needs to be, for instance, a locum coming to help with the on-call, but workforce, the HR and the administrators of the hospital will say, we can't afford those locums, we're not employing locums for this shift or that shift. So I think there are those big cultural issues, and then there's this individual thing of, I don't want to show I'm weak. If I say I need help, and then other people will change their opinion of me, and I maybe won't be promoted, or people won't refer to me anymore, I'll have to leave town kind of thing. So I think both of those things exist.